The Marion Finucane Show on RTE Radio 1 with Hyundai. Now offering 5 years free servicing on every new 142 Hyundai. Ireland's fastest growing car brand.
Welcome back. Now, if you think of a professor of classics, you probably imagine a man with spectacles, dressed very conservatively and like a don. The last figure in the world you'd call controversial. But classics professor Mary Beard from Cambridge University is quite the opposite. She's obviously a woman, a TV presenter. She has long silvery hair, a red coat and a bicycle. She's had death threats from online trolls and she's been at the centre of more than one controversy in Britain and internationally. She's also a woman who's been studying what the ancient Romans laughed at. Her latest book is called Laughter in Ancient Rome. And when she spoke to me earlier this week, Mary Beard told me how we know what the Romans were laughing at, what the sources are for researchers like her.
Well, that's always a bit tricky. But, you know, in terms of any humour in the past, it's always quite hard to know what they really laughed at. But in the case of ancient Rome, there's one amazing survival which we know was intended to make the Romans laugh, because it's an ancient Roman joke book with about 260 jokes, some of which are still quite funny, some of which aren't, which, you know, clearly signal laughter. In fact, the whole collection is called The Laughter Lover. So it's a good start if you want to think about what the Romans laughed at.
Certainly if it's an emperor cracking a joke at his subject's expense and he's someone like Caligula or this guy Commodus, you mightn't find the joke very funny if you were on the receiving end.
No, I think that the jokes in the collection are rather mild and nice and friendly. We do have a clear sense that some jokes in Roman culture were pretty nasty and threatening, you know, like, so you have to imagine the nasty Emperor Caligula at dinner, and he's got a couple of guys on either side, and they notice he's laughing, and they say, "Oh, so what, you know, what are you laughing at?" And he said, "Oh, just at the thought that I could snap my fingers and have both your heads cut off instantly." Well, you know, joke, well, sort of black humour, but not very nice. And quite a lot of Roman laughter is threatening. But there's another side to it, which is, I think, much kind of more light-hearted and gentle, and really exposing the sort of silliness of the world, like many of our jokes do, I think.
What's your favourite joke in The Laughter Lover?
It's quite hard to have a favourite joke, but I've got a couple which still slightly tickle me. One's a bit like the Monty Python Dead Parrot sketch, which is why I think I like it. It says a bloke buys a slave from his friend and he takes him home, and after a few days the slave dies. So he goes back to the friend and says, "Hey, that slave you sold me, he died." "That's funny," says the friend. "He never did that when I owned him."
Quite. But it's like, they have these jokes, don't they, about things like slavery and crucifixion, which you can't imagine travelling quite so well today.
No, I think, you know, we obviously and rightly feel a bit anxious about slave jokes, but nevertheless, I think there's still a kind of sense in which we can see there what the joke was. I mean, it's like, there's another nice one about a guy who's going abroad, and a friend says, "Look, while you're abroad, you know, can you buy me 2 15-year-old slaves, please, and bring them back?" The guy says, "Yes, that's fine. But if I can't find 2 15-year-olds, then I'll bring you 1 30-year-old. Is that okay?" Now, we can tell that. Oh, actually, I've heard that in modern culture, you know, told about women. You know, so there is a kind of sense that it's a joke you tell about the oppressed minority group, I think.
And politicians like Enoch Powell, of course, who was a renowned classicist, he wasn't above quoting the odd ancient Roman joke.
No, we tend not to think of Enoch Powell as a great jokester. We remember him more for his controversial outbursts, not his funny ones. But there is a very well-known quip by Enoch Powell about the House of Commons barber, because House of Commons used to have its own resident barber who was well-known to be a great, very chatty character who was always giving the politicians in his chair his views about how the world should be sorted out. out. And Powell goes to the House of Commons barber one day, and the barber says, as barbers do, how should I cut your hair, sir? And Powell says, in silence. Now, even Powell's worst political enemies used to have to concede that was quite a good quip. You know, you might hate his politics, but it was quite a good quip. What almost all of the people commenting on that joke didn't know was that's a joke that is found in the Roman joke book and actually goes back even earlier in Roman culture. So I think for Powell, Powell was a great classicist, and you know, he must have known that what he was doing was quoting a Roman joke. And I suspect the joke for him was that all those people who said, "What a good joke, Enoch," didn't realise that it was a very, very old joke indeed.
And it shows that in some ways we are still laughing at the same things, aren't we? What about the humour, though, of ordinary Romans? Because you can imagine that things that were written down were presumably for a better class of Roman who was going around to dinner parties and so on.
Yeah, that's really the problem. And it's the problem not just with Roman jokes, but with the whole of Roman culture. How do we understand what the ordinary man and woman in the street thought or laughed about or did? The absolutely correct answer is that we don't know. But people have thought, and not without some reason, that the jokes that are collected in this joke book, as against the kind of Emperor Caligula style jokes, that the jokes that are collected in this joke book have some resonance, you know, on the street. They look like they could be the jokes that are told by little people about and against, you know, people higher up the social hierarchy. Mm-hmm. About half of them actually star in a kind of, as the sort of butt of the joke, really, a character called the Scholasticos, and that probably means something like the egghead or the absent-minded professor. And the egghead or the absent-minded professor is always being really stupid because he's so clever, you know. So I'll just give you one example. There's a nice one about a guy going to an egghead who's also a doctor, and he says, doctor, when I get up I feel faint for about half an hour, and then I feel okay again. So the egghead says, oh well, that's easy, get up half an hour later then. Now there's a sense in which it might be that what we're seeing here is the ordinary person on the street, you know, cracking a joke, yeah, about all those clever guys who actually turn out to be damn stupid underneath because they're just too clever by half.
And what about the treatment of women, Mary, in Roman jokes? And, you know, I'm wondering as well, given everything you went through in terms of online abuse and trolling and all the rest, whether, you know, an awful lot has changed there either.
Well, women don't figure very much in Roman jokes, but where they do, I'm afraid it tends to be pretty misogynistic. I mean, you know, our culture has got its remaining strands of misogyny, and you know, I've felt the rough end of those. But Roman culture, you know, was a million times worse. So women mostly come into these jokes as a kind of, you know, caricature. You know, like, why is the guy celebrating? Because he's just buried his wife. And women are always shrewish, drunken, or, you know, rather oversexed. Now, I think one of the things that's interesting about the collection is that it's a pretty clean collection, really. It's not full of dirty jokes. And so I can quote it happily on air, I think. One of the sort of absolutely typical, you know, misogynistic bits of humour is about the oversexed wife, you know, because women are always thought to be really desperate for more sex, and in fact to be running their men a frightful dance. So the man goes home to his oversexed wife, and he says, "Hello, darling, what should we do tonight? Shall we have dinner or shall we make love?" And she says, "We haven't got any bread."
But you do feel, don't you, still today, Mary, that women in public life get a lot more abuse? I mean, and certainly that's something that you feel you endured, either, you know, expressing your opinion in public or being on Twitter or being criticised over your appearance or whatever.
Yeah, you know, I think women who put their head above the parapet tend from some quarters to get shot at, really. And I feel relatively resilient about this. And I think, just to be a bit more optimistic, the good thing that's come out of my experiences with guys taking either humorous pot shots at you or actually aggressive or threatening pot shots at you is that you quickly discover, also from Twitter, that most of the rest of the nation, even the world, does actually think this is terrible. So we shouldn't concentrate, I think, too much on that significant minority of real idiots who think it's fine just to ridicule women for, speaking up and speaking their mind. I mean, most people do, I think, believe that is a really terrible and actually very, very silly and slightly juvenile or sad thing to do. Mm. So you have to, in a way, you have to develop a thick skin.
Yeah, and you've needed it, haven't you, when you expressed support, for instance, for immigration, which is, a hot topic in Britain at the moment. Or when you said that, there was a way of looking at the US, the role that it had been playing in terms of 9/11. And I think the phrase was that the US had it coming in the sense that they had contributed to the situation that they found themselves in.
Yeah, what I actually said was many people think that the US had it coming, which was slightly different. But I was talking about the way that in some ways Western foreign policy, and it goes for the United Kingdom as much as it goes for the US, is in part implicated in the terrorist threat. And yet, that in some ways is certainly at the time was not a popular opinion, but I think you do get it in the neck more if you say that if you're a woman. I think there's a slight tendency to say that you're kind of interfering in things that you don't understand, my dear. Almost go back to the knitting, which is one tweet I had. And I think there's a tendency, mostly for men, but occasionally for women too, to express their disagreement, not by arguing with you, because arguing with someone's fine. I'm not sure that I'm necessarily right, but by just resorting to threats of violence, I'm going to chop your head off, I'm going to rape you, or particularly vile things about the most intimate parts of your body, which I couldn't possibly say on radio.
And you really got messages like that?
Yeah, yes. It was an eye opener.
It's hard not to feel contaminated, isn't it, a little bit, even seeing things like that?
Yeah, and it's hard also not to feel, I'm pretty brave, I'm pretty upfront, I'm pretty confident. But when you get a tweet at, 8 o'clock at night saying, we're outside your house waiting for you, and it's dark and it's winter and you're on your own, you have to do a double take and say, look, they're not, You have to kind of take yourself in your own hands and say, this is not, they are not really waiting for me. Or, my house is not going to be blown up at 9:57 p.m. That's tough. And, it was relatively easier for me than I think it has been for other people. I'm, in my late 50s, I've had a good career. I'm reasonably confident. Had I received a tweet like that 30 years ago, I wouldn't have reacted in the same resilient way. I've grown my thick skin. You're not born with it.
well may you wear it, because then certainly you... It must have been an absolutely horrible experience to go through. Tell me one thing, Mary. What drew you to the ancient Romans and ancient Pompeii and all those ruins and people of a long time ago?
I was taken to the British Museum when I was about 5 by my mum, and she took me to see the Elgin Marbles from the Parthenon in Athens. OK, it was Greece. And I just thought, somebody did this 2,500 years ago? This is just amazing. And after that, I sort of never looked back. People in the past did really, really clever and interesting things, and they're worth studying for all they're worth.
And that actually raises a really interesting point, because you got that love of the classics, you got that love of the past from being brought to a museum, and even the controversy over the Elgin Marbles and how they got there. And I was dragging some children around the Louvre last weekend and watching a whole load of people taking selfies in front of the Mona Lisa and wondering, this mass tourism that we, and everybody has to see the sights, are we doing more harm than good in all of that, I wonder sometimes?
It's very hard to know, because you don't know among all those people taking selfies in front of the Mona Lisa or the Venus de Milo or whatever, we don't yet know which of those will actually have been really impacted on by that. You know, which, you know, how many professors of classics in, you know, 50 years' time will get asked the question you've just asked of me and say, do you know when I first got interested? It was when I took my selfie in front of the Venus de Milo.
Oh, that's brilliant. There's hope for my daughter yet.
There is. You never know. She might decide to be an astrophysicist, and that would be great. But it's, you know, we're in it. We're playing it for the long term here.
Well, you've certainly brought, I think what anyone who's seen your TV programmes on life in ancient Pompeii or meeting the Romans or what Caligula was really like, I certainly, you seem to have fun bringing them to life and bringing as well the human side of all these ruins and relics that we look at with such awe and reverence to life.
Yeah, because there's such a lot in it for us. And, it, you know, people do have the impression sometimes that the Romans are, you know, all about generals fighting battles and massacring poor barbarians, or if not, being extremely pompous and standing up and making endless speeches. I mean, one of the things I've been trying to do is to show, look, actually, you know, we can go into ordinary people's homes, we can look at lavatories that Romans sat on, and we can actually also read their sometimes funny jokes.
Well, it's been a pleasure to talk to you about their funny jokes and to talk to you about yourself this morning. Mary Beard, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks very much.